take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Welcome to Nurses Out Loud Talk Radio, Thursday edition with Nurse Michelle on AmericaOutLoud.news. We live in a world full of visual imagery, and we're all, raising children that have a phone in their hand, and they can see the entire world right in the palm of their hand. And we realize there's going to be an impact on the minds of the next generation because they can see so much of their own peers and their lives compared to those peers. When once upon a time, when I was at home doing my homework and I spoke to my friends, I just spoke to them through a phone with a long cord and I couldn't see them. I didn't know if they had curlers in their hair or if they just had a facial put on their face. I didn't know what they looked like at their worst because it wasn't there or at their most natural moments of their day. Now we're having everybody have images that are trying to make themselves look like at their best at all times, filtered, and airbrush or changing your face, that makes people start to struggle with their own self-image and whether or not there's something flawed about themselves. And we do really want for the next generation to not have the bondage of denying that they are mind, body, soul, and spirit. They're not just their external image, and that things that they may be dissatisfied with about their own bodies is not something that we want them thinking they've been made flawed or broken. We want them to feel like this is who I am, and love your body the best you can. And there's going to be things that happen to our bodies throughout the course of lives that do change things, whether it be scarring from surgeries, car wrecks, traumas, and things like that, that are going to force us to possibly have a reason to engage with the plastic surgeon and have some things done to repair us back to what we used to be. Women will be breastfeeding babies, who knows how many, and their bodies will start to change, and birthing babies and their bodies will start to change, and they'll want to have improvements made on their bodies. And it's not that it's a wrong thing for them to want to do that. They're just wanting to take care of their bodies well. But here's the problem. We know in the Nurses Out Loud audience that there is corruption within this medical industry and in the pharmaceutical complex. And we know that there are drugs and procedures and implants of sorts that can be put inside the human body that actually have black box warnings on them, that the physician should be saying, hey, this says black box warning. I should not give it to somebody under the age of 25. And they've got a 21-year-old in front of them that they think maybe this drug could help. And somehow they still continue to prescribe those drugs anyways to people, even though it's black box labeled. The same is true for implants of any kind and for plastic surgery. There has been great harm done by different kinds of medical implants. And today's special guest with me is Laura Bowden. And she is a person who is a patient advocate, an activist. And I'm going to let her give the formal titles for what she would call herself, because initially she had to become a person that was a patient herself, that had to have something go wrong with something that she had done, and nobody had warned her of the risks associated to that. Just like what we're seeing with the COVID-19 vaccine, inappropriate, non-informed consent given to patients, failure to give proper informed consent to patients who want to have or need to have a procedure or have been mandated to have in the cases of the COVID vaccine. And they were not given proper informed consent, but yet they alone will suffer the consequences of the risks associated with any medical procedure. So I'm very thankful to have her here with me today. She's going to bring some information to you that I can guarantee you probably did not know is going on and has been going on for a very long time. And if you're a person who has had breast cancer, you do have breast cancer now, and you're possibly facing the decision about what you're going to do after the removal of your breast, this is a topic for you. If you are a person that has wanted to have breast implants and you have been doing your research into it, this story is for you today. So please tune in. It applies to more people than you realize. And welcome, Laura, to Nurses Out Loud. Tell us about how you got started with this.
Well, welcome. Thank you for having me. It was so nice meeting you. Thank you for giving me this platform to educate and give this important information. To put it in a nutshell, you want me to start from the beginning? How did this all come about, right?
Yes.
26 years old, nursed my three babies. And basically, I was never thought about my breasts being too small. My husband's a butt guy, TMI, I know. He didn't want me to do it. It was a 2-week decision. I was standing at the bus stop with my 5-year-old. My neighbor said, "Hey, I got breast implants." I said, "No, you didn't." She's like, "Yeah." I said, "Can I see them?" She said, "Sure." Went and I'm like, "Oh, those are cool." Went home. Husband said, "Absolutely not." I said, "Come with me. Come with me to the surgeon. You can question them. You know, I'm sure they're safe." Went, of course, told they're totally safe. I could be 8 feet under and my breast will still be standing up. Yeah. So I got them. So fast forward, 26 years old, incredibly healthy, and aerobics instructor, aerobics, Jane Fonda days, very active, very healthy. Within 4 months, it started with fatigue, just not quite feeling right. Within 2 years, fast forward, every doctor you can imagine, brain fog, fatigue, memory loss, dry eyes, gained 30 pounds, heart palpitations, muscle twitches, IBS issues. There's a host of 55 symptoms that are related to breast implant illness. Now, we have to remember, this is back in the day where there was no social media. We didn't, you know, as much as we say social media is the demise of the world, at this right now where we're at, it is women saving women today. Back then, not so much. After 2 years of having them, how did I know it was my breast implants? My God-given gut. One day I thought, what is the difference in my life? And I thought, I have got breast implants. So I was taking 6 Motrin 800s a day just to function. And I made sure not to take any medicine so I could feel the pain and feel, I literally felt like I was dying. I went back to my plastic surgeon because he would tell me the truth, right? I went back to my plastic surgeon and I said, "I'm very sick. If it's my breast implants, please tell me." I kid you not, he tapped me on the knee. Now. There's no scientific data to show that's why you're sick, but I'll take them out under a local. I said, get them out of me. I was literally a week away from this man taking my implants out under a local. Now we have to remember I had silicone implants. Okay. We don't know if they're ruptured. Okay. We just don't. We don't know unless there's an MRI. So if this man was going to remove my implants under a local, we had discussed the scar capsule, and we'll get into that a little bit later, he would have went in and the scar capsule that your body forms around any foreign invader, he would have just opened up that scar capsule, pretty much possibly ruptured if it was not ruptured, taken the implant out, left that scar capsule with the silicone in my body and sent me on my way. I was a week away from having that happen. I was at my grandma's house. Jenny Jones, for us older generation, she's kind of like the generic Oprah. She was on at my grandma's and she was talking about being sick from her breast implants. And at that point, I knew that this was wrong with me. On the bottom of the TV scrolled a support group with a name. And that night I called a woman, her name was Vicky, at 9 o'clock at night, and she saved my life. She said, "You are very sick. If you go back to that man, he will kill you."
Wow.
So then became my journey of trying to find out how to get help. Again, no social media. How do we do this, right? Wow. And it was through Lifelines of Vicky and other incredible women that I found a wonderful neurologist in Texas at Baylor University. We took $10,000 just for me to walk into Baylor University. We needed $10,000.
Wow.
Because insurance doesn't cover it. And so many women were going there to get help. In that hospital, there were three floors of sick women just like me. Now, how did I know that? Because my neurologist was doing a study. It was called adjuvant. Where have we heard that word before, right? Adjuvant silicone breast disease. Okay. And he was doing a study. So three floors of women. So we were all going for different tests. And I started to realize all these women were just like me. But they had ruptures after ruptures, had been told it's something that they did. Was it rough sex? They ruptured it themselves. They had silicone in the brain, kidneys, and liver. So for that 2 weeks, I made this the incredible friendship with all these beautiful women. And I was one of the youngest ones. And it was time for me to get my implants taken out at Baylor University by an incredible surgeon. This is a God thing. This is a God thing. Because back then, they didn't know the proper way of removing this implant and the importance of that scar capsule. This doctor and the neurologist he was working with, they knew the importance of that. I had my surgery. Literally the next day, somebody flipped a switch. My brain could think again. It is like there's a cloud in your brain. Unless you've been through it, it's so hard to describe because we look fine. When you think somebody feels like they're dying, it's not like it's an open wound and you could say, oh, she's sick or she doesn't feel good. It's basically, it is, you feel like you're dying from the inside out and you can't, and you think you're crazy. And the doctors act like you're crazy because they just assume that your blood work shows that it's fine. So, and there's no drawer to put this illness in. There's no like, oh, that's what you have. So with that, the neurologist, I said, how, when he came into my room the next day, he said, how do I feel so much better? His exact words, you are one of the lucky ones. You were young, they were not ruptured, and we took the logs off the fire. So it was literally like my immune system. It's phenomenal. What happens? Diagnosis of exclusion.
Go ahead. Talking about an immune system that was literally put on defense, self-defense, and it had already encapsulated this implant to protect you.
Yep.
And it was fighting every symptom, namely inflammation, systemically all over your body. And as soon, you're saying that as soon as this thing is removed from your body is saying thank you in gratitude, and it's coming back to itself because the war is now not necessary.
You got it. That is exactly it. I mean, it makes sense. You're in fight or flight, your nervous system. So everything is is affected. For me, it was that quick. It doesn't always happen with everybody like that. Although 70 to 80% of the women get better when these implants are removed. There's different varieties. It depends if they had saline implants, how long did they have? Saline, you're dealing with mold, fungus, and bacteria. Faulty valves for over 30 years, they've known this.
Let's talk about that. So let's talk about the different kind of breast implants that people get and what kind of problems they have, what they will cause for people.
Exactly. Great question. So we have silicone, which has a silicone shell. Okay. Those were taken off the market in 1992, put back on the market in 2006 with no new safety studies, no new and approved. And the only reason they were put back on the market because of financially invested lobbying from certain industries. We can leave that at that. The only reason they were taken off the market is because a woman that was suing Dow Corning because she was dying from her breast implants, she would not settle unless the gag order of what this company knew for how long, all these internal documents, she would not settle unless the gag order was lifted. They lifted the gag order. All this documentation went to the FDA commissioner, David Kessler, and he put the moratorium on and said, oh, okay, we're going to take these off the market until they are proven to be safe. That's from 1992 to 2006. At that time, everybody was getting saline implants. Okay. So they were put back on the market in 2006, same crap. Not new and improved, no studies, zero studies. Okay.
And when you're saying they put them back on the market, they put silicone back on the market, even though saline was already out and going.
Yep. Yep. So all these women were getting the saline because nobody wanted the silicone ones, right? Not that they still have a silicone shell. And they have a host of their own issues. They have a faulty valve. What happens when we take saline solution and put it in body temperature? It's a petri dish. So we have bacteria in, bacteria out. So I have to say, we are finding that the women with the saline implants are actually sicker, more, and I don't mean this in a bad way, more mental, more depression, suicide, migraines. Their recovery is a lot harder. Their detox, they're dealing with mold, fungus, and bacteria. It branches off, right? So they have a double whammy. Mm-hmm. So all these women that thought they were doing the safe thing, you know, not so safe after all.
No, it's just traumatic to hear that because in a lot of cases, women who have breast cancer, they're going to have their breasts removed. Even if they had a tumor on just one side, they're being advised to go ahead and have the other one removed because of the risk that it, a few years from now, you may have to have the surgery anyway. So women who do, of course, breasts are associated to women and our identity as women. So the inclination is going to be to go and get implants put in. So the question is what are the other alternatives for people that are looking at getting breast implants or having to have breast implants?
Yeah, that is such a great question. I think it's sad either way. You know, women are not given informed consent. And if anything we walk away from today, there needs to be an informed choice. Informed consent is a must. Kind of like the same thing. We need to be given all the information so we know that we're making the right choice for our body. So that is definitely not happening with the breast cancer survivors, which is also equally as heartbreaking, if not more. Not one is less important, but you know where I'm going with that. Right. They're going from one problem thinking they're doing the right thing. So when a woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, immediately they go to a plastic surgeon. Well, we're going to keep you looking like a woman. Oh, there's no discussion of breast implant illness. They are not given a breast implant illness informed checklist, right? So at least they know. And these implants, the capsules are known to cause cancer. The textured implants, which is the majority of the implants that they put into breast cancer patients, because they're textured and they sit in the pocket better, they don't move around. So the ones that are now recalled are what majority are being used in the breast cancer survivors. Mm. So we're removing their breasts so they don't get cancer, and we're replacing it with a product that causes cancer, and they are not being informed. It's exactly, the hair on the back of my head is standing up. We now are seeing breast cancer survivors that are now breast implant illness survivors or patients. So many of them, they do a flat closure. You know, I mean, they have to come to terms with it. How do we backtrack, right? They're diagnosed with breast cancer. Well, what now? Where is that middle that we don't directly go to breast implants? Okay, a flap procedure. They can actually take muscle and fat and rebuild the breast. It's a very long, lengthy recovery. So that's not an option that the surgeons ever give the women. It's immediate, you get breast implants. So the reason we're talking about this is so the community understands that there is an option. Is it more difficult road recovery? Yes. But long-term, is it the safest to not get breast implants and put another cancer-causing agent into your body after you've already, your immune system is already jeopardized, right? So make it make sense. It just makes no sense.
Yeah, when a woman is considering it for, let's just say, augmentation because they want to do that for a choice for their own personal reasons, the first inclination is going to be this day and age is start Googling breast implants, right? Something we did not have at the time period that you had. When she says there wasn't any social media, we mean there was no Google. There was no, if you wanted to learn something, you went to this thing called the library and you had to hunt down books on a Rolodex. Exactly. So you would have to find books that were written very likely, probably in the medical literature. Yeah. For medical physicians, it probably wasn't written for the common person who had not had any medical knowledge. So access to knowledge was very limited. But even then, it was important to inform people of what the risks are. Just like with any drug, you should be asking what the risks are associated to those drugs. So when you're doing, now you can do your research and you can start hunting down information about the different options. So right now, if women were wanting to get a breast implant right now, what are the choices that they're going to have given to them? And what do we want to say about those choices?
Okay. So what their choices are going to be is they're not going to be told about breast implant illness. That's the choice that should be made, is that they're given this information. At least then they're making a choice and an option, a lift, which is a fancy word. Mastopexy is a fancy word for a lift. The majority of the women actually just wanted the air put back in them or just wanted them lifted. All they really needed was a lift, right?
Okay. Say the air put back in them. That's what a mastopexy essentially does. It's just lifting the skin that's stretched from nursing babies and bringing it up so that the body that is already naturally beautiful just gets its perk back into it, right?
Exactly. And not everybody has breast tissue. So it's in a perfect world, that sounds all great, right? If they don't have breast tissue, another option is a fat transfer. I know there's a lot of controversy about fat transfers. It's like, wait a minute, you know, it's very surgeon specific. It really depends on the surgeon that's performing. And it takes a skill. And what it does is gives an upper pole, gives just more of a fullness on top, especially for our thin patients, that there is no breast tissue. We can't make something there that's not there. You know, so as great as it sounds, hey, we're just going to like lift them up and make them perky again. If there's no breast tissue, there's just no breast tissue.
And when we talk about fat transfer, go ahead and tell them the places in the body where the fat would be taken from.
So usually the donor site is the abdomen. Okay. And where that fat goes is you have skin, you have to have some breast tissues because the fat needs a home to live, which is think of the breast tissue like a sponge. Okay. So it has to live within that sponge. And that gives it a little bit of the upper fullness so you don't see their ribs. It's the thin patients that really, because aesthetically, we still care about what we look like. We got them for a reason. So as much as these women are so deathly ill, they want their health back. There's that part of them, right, is like, okay, but I feel so vain. Well, no, we're still sexual beings. Would it great for me to say, just get them out and don't worry about what you, that's truly not realistic. Their health is number one. But aesthetically, having a good outcome and feeling good about yourself is also a concern.
Okay, so does mastopexy have a significant side effects that are bad for them?
No. It's basically, we call it an anchor or Y's pattern, where the scar goes underneath, it goes up, and actually goes around the nipple, which the scars heal within a year. You can't even see them. Just tightens up that skin and just places them a little bit higher on our chest. I kind of giggle so we're not tripping on them. But just gives them nice, more of a nice perky breasts.
And can women do this who still want to have babies and breastfeed?
Absolutely.
Only afterwards?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they can still do it. They can still, I mean, there's no crystal ball that they'll still be able to nurse, but you know, it's not something that we see the women have a difficulty time doing.
Okay, so when we come back after the break, we can go into a lot. I want definitely to go into what you had to fight with the FDA and what success you have with that. We can do that after the break. But on this first half, I definitely want people who are tuned in to be able to hear that there is another option if it's something you're considering, because obviously somebody who has breast cancer, the primary concern is surviving cancer. So
right.
Their most focus is going to be on their health and their treatments for the cancer and getting what feels like the violated organ out of their body. And in this case, breast cancer, it would be their breast. So they're facing getting their breasts removed. So do people need to have breast removal surgeons that are the cancer doctors that are specialized in something particular?
That's where it gets tricky. That is such a good question. Such a good question. It's obviously definitely the breast cancer surgeons that are going to have to perform that, right? But now we're talking about two different things here. We're talking about having it done where the implant is not an option. They've been given informed consent. It's not something for them. And then we have when they do fall ill, right? Now they have breast cancer. They survive breast cancer, and now they have breast implant illness. The issue with that is that majority of surgeons do not believe in breast implant illness, and they don't understand the proper way of removing these implants. So many of the women are now coming to knowledgeable surgeons like Dr. Pryor and Dr. Sood that believe in BII and know the proper way of removing these implants to ensure that scar capsule is taken out, to make sure all the chemical, all the toxins are taken out of the body. Majority of surgeons, if they don't believe in that, they're not going to do the proper removal, and the women will continue to stay sick because we have left that capsule with the toxins that leached into this scar capsule in their body. So their body still sees it as an issue, and their immune system is still in overdrive.
Well, that brings up a valid point that Nurses Out Loud is regularly trying to make sure the audience is aware of, and that our public, you need to make sure you're sharing this kind of content with the people in your audience, because people are not going to hear this kind of news from their local doctors. Just as the people in your community went to their local doctors who said that the vaccine, COVID vaccines, were safe and effective, they didn't do their homework, they didn't do their research. What is she telling you? That there are surgeons that, quote unquote, do not believe in breast implant illness. So if you're dealing with a doctor who chooses to be ignorant and does not do the research, does not look hard into the data, you do not want this person to do anything with your body, because they're not in the business of being well-informed.
Yeah.
And we want well-informed people. If you're going to say you're a breast implant surgeon specialist, for goodness sakes, you better have done some serious research on this topic.
Yeah. You know, and we can say why that is. I mean, I truly believe that surgeons either either choose by ignorance or just wanting to stay in their lane and not coming to terms that maybe what they have been told is not exactly true. Whatever the reasons, wherever we are with those reasons, women are still being gaslit. It is psychosocial media driven, that it is all these women that just decide they're going to jump on board and decide that they're going to get rid of their breast implants because maybe Mary on social media is doing it. In one support group, there's 188,000 sick women from their breast implants. There's 250 support groups. Let's do the math. If somebody shits themselves from eating lettuce and gets E. coli, the FDA recalls it. If one person, we have hundreds and thousands of women sick from their told to be safe breast implants.
Yeah, unbelievable. Okay, before we break, will you tell us the name of the doctors you did mention so that everyone who hears it knows the doctors you mentioned, Pryor and somebody else?
Absolutely. It is Dr. Landon Pryor and Dr. Adita Sood, S-O-O-D. And we are in Rockford, Illinois at Pryor Health. And, you know, women travel from all over the state, sometimes the country, to come to us because they've done better research than the freaking FBI by the time I'm on the phone with these women. You know, I come speaking to this from woman to woman first before I am anything else. And I just, you know, hope to be their voice. And, you know, these women are really sick and we believe them. And, you know, we do the proper removal and they know that they're not alone and they're not crazy.
It is wonderful. Okay, we're going to I need to cut for an intermission for our sponsors. Don't forget to check out our online store at AmericaOutloud.shop. You will find all the awesome products available at a discount, including the official Nurses Out Loud sponsor, ASEA. Be sure to check out the Renew 28 Revitalizing Redox Gel. Everyone needs to add this to your medicine cabinet so you can manage pain, rashes, and so many other common elements without medication. And this gel can even be added to your skincare, resulting in a smoother and more toned looking skin. I want you all to check out the ASEA products and see all that they have available. You'll be amazed at how many wonderful things they have. And remember, Redox is something that is not only natural, it is native to your body. So you're literally giving it something native to its body to help it repair like it used to when it was a child. And be sure to check out the Redox Liquid Supplement. And you will want to take about 2 ounces of that in the morning, in the evening at a minimum. But if you were like Nurse Michelle and broke your hip, you're going to increase that amount. And we're happy to help you with that. And you can send questions nurses@AmericaOutloud.news. Be sure to use promo code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your purchase. I'll catch you on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
It's time and this is
what. ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our Redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit healright.com/outloud or americaoutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Lifestyle changes are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support cholesterol and blood pressure with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. The Wellness Company's chief medical board designed every supplement and medical protocol with your health in mind. From groundbreaking supplements like the Spike Support Formula to unique care like Freedom from Big Pharma. Join a healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interest of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be, with a company that shares your values. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutLoud.news. A place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Michelle. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for the gift of your time. And I have with me Laura Bowden, and we're talking about breast implant illness and looking for solutions and exposing the realities of the harms associated to saline and silicone breast implants. And we're looking at other alternatives for people and trying to provide you resources as well that will help you know how to, one, be validated as a person who has been suffering with possibly extreme systemic illness since you got breast implants. So no matter what your reason was for getting breast implants, or if you're looking at getting breast implants or augmentation in any way, this is a topic for you, and I want to make sure that you all learn what we have today and know that our show notes, Michelle, you can go to Nurses Out Loud page on AmericaOutLoud.news/Nurses Out Loud, and you can choose Nurse Michelle's face, and you will find this topic and all the resources in the show notes that we're going to be revealing to you in this second half. So welcome back, Laura. Let's start with how Laura became known to be a speaker in this topic, because obviously you had to go through suffering to get here. So let's hear about that.
So we had a little bit of where I had left off. At Baylor University, I met three floors of sick women, got my implants out correctly, total capsulectomy, end block with the scar capsule. Again, how did they knew back then? God spared me for sure. I got better within 24 hours. It was like somebody flipped a switch. There's just no other way. I realized at that point I needed to come back to Illinois. And I said goodbye, or that I would obviously talk to these women again, but I would come back to Illinois and I would be their voice. They were so deathly ill, these women. One actually lived in a car. A lot of husbands left them. A lot of women got them for their husbands and they got sick. And when they got sick, obviously that, you know, was not something he was supportive, and the women found themselves alone and sick. I promised them that I would come back and I would be their voice. So I came back, and what do you do with that, right? My husband and I started a support group. We put a little ad in the newspaper, little tiny ad, and women came from underground. That's how we found them. And, we built our support group. We traveled all over, kind of like different conferences, kind of like how you and I met, right? Where different scientists, brave doctors, women would speak all over and come home with all this information and studies after studies. So when they say there's no science, there is science. It's been there for decades. So we came home and the support group took off. And the Oprah show found out that we had a support group. They called and asked if we would want to be in the audience. You can imagine the excitement of being on a platform and being able to speak our truth, right? On a national platform. So we packed up. And now the interesting thing was, half of our audience was our support group. The other half was the Why Me support group. They were not happy with us because we were taking their choice of feeling whole again. So really what we were doing is trying to give them information. And so there was always this battle. I was used to seeing those women when we would rally, picket, they were always there. So you kind of wonder the purpose and who their backing was on that.
What do you mean when you call them the Why Me population? What do you mean?
Why Me back in the day was breast cancer. It was kind of like the Comus with the breast cancer survivors.
Okay.
the same thing. They were women that suffered from breast cancer, and we were taking their right, because we were trying to get the implants taken off the market, we were taking their right away from feeling whole again. Where really what we were trying to do is educate them, inform them, and warn them. And they were not very happy about that.
So at the time that Oprah aired, I believe it was in 1995, was there not knowledge of the kind of fat transfer as an option for these people?
No. You know, there was the flap for the breast cancer survivors, but it was kind of poo-pooed because it's a very extensive surgery. So it wasn't something that was not as talked about, because it was the recovery and the pain. It was a lot easier just put breast implants in and go on with your life and feeling like a woman again.
Let me give a brief explanation of what she says, the flap. So it actually, when I was in nursing school back in the 80s, it was the one surgery as a nursing student I was allowed to sit, be a part of. And I was forced to stand on a little stool for the entire surgery, which was multiple hours. And they did remove, the woman had had breast cancer and finally gotten to come back and have herself made whole again as a woman and have her breast put back. And the way that they do that is they take the fat from the belly. Imagine cutting out a oval or like triangulation of an oval in your abdomen, and you're having a tummy tuck essentially. And they're removing that fat and skin from the abdomen, and they're actually cutting that piece of flesh into two parts. And they are putting it underneath the skin of the breast cancer survivor, and they are building breasts with their tummy. Skin and fat. It's their own body recreating breasts. And then they would come back sometime later and have nipples created or tattooed on top of that.
I do have to say the majority of our breast cancer survivors, and then obviously the breast implants, have their choices to go flat. You know, they've come to terms, they can wear a prosthesis or just accept themselves for the way they are. That is, we probably see more that than we see the reconstructive. However, with that being said, if we can change the narrative and make sure they're given an informed choice and give them a choice, it may be something that is going to happen before they get the implants. And that's something they decide to do with given a choice that the implants may not be the safest road for them, or are not the safest road for them.
So I'm sure this knowledge boomed after the Oprah show. So what happened after that?
It did. So after that, I had realized how important it was to really get back in the community and more of a social media aspect and the BII community. And I wiped off my VHS from my Oprah and got it put out into the community. And women were like, are you kidding me? There's women been talking about this for decades. I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. This has been talked about and nobody knew it. And a woman got a hold of me and she asked me to be a part of a documentary with 20 sick women. And I said, sure, I will help any way that I can. And we reached out to every single plastic surgeon in Illinois to come and enter the lion's den and speak to these women regarding breast implant illness. And not one plastic surgeon showed up but Dr. Pryor. Wow. That was the day that I met him. And he was blown away that he never knew this either. And he wanted all the information, every study that I had from back then, every VHS, every, I was in Jenny Jones three times, Good Morning America, Spoken Washington, anybody that would listen on any kind of platform to try to educate the public. And so it was at that time that he just was like, wow, you know, and to be sitting there and telling these women, I believe you, that was huge. It just speaks on his integrity. That spoke volumes to me. So it took me about a year, because I owned a nail salon for 32 years. And I woke up one day and I knew God was not done with me. And I called Dr. Pryor and I said, I'm ready to advocate again. And he said, I've been waiting for you. So I have been with him now for 3.5 years. And he's definitely our fearless leader, who has handpicked another fabulous surgeon named Dr. Sood. Neither of them put breast implants in anymore. Personally, I couldn't be with a surgeon that was knowing everything that I know. And we have women travel from all over the states. You know, women talk when women, you know, it literally is women saving women. It is on platforms like this in social media that women realize they're not crazy. By the time, like I said, by the time they get a hold of us, they've done better research than the freaking FBI. You know, that's really not, we don't need to sell them anything. They know in their God-given gut, they've been gaslit, told that they're just crazy. There's nothing wrong with them. Here's a pill for anxiety. You know, you're just under stress. You know, I really have to question, if this was a man, would we still be talking about this after decades?
Yeah, this is really is absurd. So here you are now advocating for women. Women are feeling empowered. Women are finding solutions because women are trying to help women. And you have these very small collection of physicians who are committed to your effort. So what happens? So it evolves into having to confront the three-letter organizations that actually allow these to be on the market. So what happens with that story?
Good question. So in 2019, only because of brave BII advocates went to the FDA and demanded this conference. And it's not because they had a come to Jesus moment. It is because of these strong advocates that said, hey, we're going to do this. And that is when the conference happened. So there were 80 of us that went to speak at the FDA. If you go to YouTube and you look up Laura Bowden on Oprah, you will see me speaking on the Oprah show in that same 7-minute clip. You will see me speaking at the FDA. I had never submitted my letter because I wrote it the night before I left. I walked up to the mic. I lied to them, said I was in a cancellation list, and they let me speak. Had they read that letter that I wrote, they would have never let me speak. And for me, it was validation and a mic drop moment, closure. They know exactly what they're doing. They've been doing it for decades. They know these implants are not safe.
And now there is a mandatory checklist that you're supposed to be given as a breast implant pursuer, but it's not law that they have to do it. Tell us about that real quick.
Yes, it is not law. It's only mandatory. And unfortunately, there's no watchdogs, so they don't have to do it. So when a woman comes in to get breast implants, it is supposed to be where this checklist that was put together by some amazing advocates that spoke at the FDA that are still fighting for us. They have to, before a plastic surgeon can buy breast implants, he has to make sure that these patients are informed. This is not being done. It needs to be made law. Robin Tout, one of our most amazing advocates in Arizona, actually made it law. This is what we have to happen. This has to happen. So women are given informed choice. They know what this illness is, and they can make the right choice if it's something that they still want to move forward with.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
For decades. And so I found myself with this amazing surgeon who believes us. He is our fearless leader, which I say that often. And he was able to join us in between clinic days. So,
A testimony. And Dr. Pryor has joined us now. He is here with us, and I want to bring him in and let the audience hear what he has to say, because he is one of only a handful of physicians that you have as an option in the country if you are actually looking to help yourself if you're suffering with breast implant illness. So welcome, Dr. Pryor.
Thank you. I can't to join you guys, add any kind of perspective that I can, or give you some insight into what I've, seen in my clinical practice.
Well, I want to first say thank you for being one of the brave doctors in our society, because our society does have a problem with this in general across all specialties. So I would love to know what makes a man, as particularly that you are a man and you are a physician, be the one that actually is awake to this reality and somehow has the ability to believe women when they testify that I have actually only been sick since I had these implants in my body.
Just the way that you're asking the question to me is pretty unbelievable, because I heard Laura say when I got here, and she says this consistently, like, this is one of the brave doctors that kind of quote unquote believes us women. And my response to that would be, if you've seen what I've seen, how can you not? I mean, it's not like she's like, showed me all this like literature and like talked me to death and like, forced me to believe in breast implant illness. I mean, this is something that anybody with any kind of, I don't want to use the word integrity, but anybody that pays attention to, kind of what they're doing and is receptive to the feedback, from patients about, how they feel with and without breast implants. I think obviously, as physicians and of course as surgeons, we've, taken an oath to, above all, do no harm. And so, there just got to be a point in my clinical practice, and I, admittedly used to put implants in, and it's something that we were trained to do in residency, and it's a relatively quick, easy surgery. It's profitable, from a business standpoint, it makes sense. And also it's challenging because there's still lots of women that want to get breast implants, right? And patients, a lot of patients like their breast implants and they like the way they look. And I've even heard, you know, plastic surgeons say, well, I don't want to take them out because I like doing things that look good. You know, I want my patients to look good, and like taking them out doesn't look good. Like putting them in looks good.
Yeah. And we're talking about a business that is built on aesthetics.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't want unhappy patients. You know, I don't want patients crying that they don't want their implants out and then dealing with the, you know, emotional issues that are associated with taking implants out. I mean, it's not a quick, easy fix. I mean, it's an extensive surgery, recovery, emotional journey. You know, obviously there's risk associated with it. Patients aren't super enthusiastic about having to go back to a surgeon and paying a second or third time for additional surgery. So, you know, there's a lot of challenges associated with doing explant surgery. And so, you know, I think generally most people just don't want to deal with it, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you this. When you said it, integrity, it doesn't take a lot of integrity even that if you actually remove, open up this breast and you find things that you have seen, and I'm going to let you tell the audience about what you have found, that once you see something like you've seen, there can be no doubt in your mind as a surgeon that something's gone wrong, right?
Yeah. I mean, here's where the integrity issue comes in, which is, you know, it's one thing if you just don't know, right? You know, kind of like where I was when I started in practice. But once you know, you can't unknow, right? So, you know, for me, it was like, you know, as this kind of snowball started generating momentum, and, you know, we had patients coming in that, you know, had breast augmentation previously, typically elsewhere, with these symptoms. And let's pretend for a second that I didn't even believe them. I'm like, okay, yeah, you got breast implant illness. Great. Let's just do your surgery, take the implants out, you know, and, you know, hopefully you'll go, you know, be happy and, you know, kind of move on with your life. Even if I didn't believe patients, I don't know how you can deny the reality of how patients express the improvement postoperatively. And I don't even mean just subjectively, because obviously there, you know, we can talk about placebo effect and, you know, whether or not this improvement is even quote unquote legitimate or whether or not, you know, that even matters, right? I mean, if the patients feel like they feel better, then that should be sufficient. Just like, you know, doing the opposite surgery, when you, you know, do a breast augmentation for somebody, I mean, are they actually more attractive or do they just feel more attractive, right? I mean, it's also a very subjective feeling. It's like patients do this because of how they perceive themselves and how they perceive their health and beauty and, you know, their interaction with people and relationships to others. It's all relative to, you know, our perspective and how we relate to other people. So kind of putting all that aside, you know, patients would come in after surgery and obviously objectively say that they feel better, you know, all these symptoms are improved or resolved. And so we've kind of objectified that process as much as we can. And Laura is very diligent about this. We've actually, I think, been one of the only practices in the country that have tried to objectify this as much as possible with, you know, before and after questionnaires that specify, you know, what types of symptoms they're having and what specifically symptoms have improved or been resolved with having done the surgery. And some of the improvement, I think, you know, is kind of beyond the pale of subjectivity. I mean, it's just like, you can't just say, oh, that's placebo effect. Because now that I've seen it with my own eyes, I've heard it with my own ears, and kind of beyond that, we've now objectified those results beyond just what the patients are telling us. So we've got thermoscans and we've got all kinds of objective data to tell us that inflammation is reduced, lab data and otherwise, and we're continuing to try to improve the objectivity of the patient's experience. But, you know, all that being said, yeah, you just can't continue to practice medicine in the same way. And because of that, I was just like, I just can't support myself doing implants anymore. I just, you know, it doesn't feel right to me, and it weighs on my conscience. So that's why I stopped.
Well, when he references objectifying data, we talk about data in context of subjective, something that somebody can express out with their own personal experience. But objective data is what is based in evidence-based medicine. So when he says inflammation, evidence of reduction of inflammation, there are labs that we do on patients to see what their inflammatory markers are. And they're telling us that they've actually been doing that. They're looking at thermal scans. They're looking at blood work. They're seeing improvement that is objective. That means it can be proven with with scientific testing. So that is a form of evidence-based medicine for any physicians out there listening. This group is making sure there is evidence-based medicine that shows there is improvement in the patients, not to mention the patients are feeling better. So when you remove these toxic breast implants that people have, do you see things specific like leaks and oozing and things growing inside of saline implants, that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, personally, no, I haven't seen a lot of, you know, what we would call contaminants or contamination or particulate matter or mold or fungus or, you know, the types of things that I think patients, you know, think that they're going to see or, you know, maybe even want to see to kind of justify the decision in their mind. And that's also one of the drawbacks of, you know, this type of surgery is, you know, the data that we see in surgery and even the, you know, the lab data that we might get after surgery is sometimes underwhelming. You know, a lot of times these patients have very normal looking capsules, normal looking implants, normal looking lab findings. So, you know, there is something to be said about, you know, having faith in, you know, other people's experiences and, you know, obviously identifying with and following, you know, somebody that you, you know, just have to believe when they tell you that, you know, this is real. And obviously with the power of, you know, the internet and social media, we now have kind of a collective experience as patients of, you know, tens and hundreds of thousands of patients that have now all come together and said, this has been my experience and this has been my result. But, you know, I wish I could tell you, like getting into surgery and we look at the implant and, you know, there's some big beacon or signal coming off the implant saying, you know, infected, contaminated, inflammation. And, you know, unfortunately, it's just not, hasn't been my experience. Maybe, you know, Laura can, you know, she's obviously worked with a number of surgeons, but that hasn't been something that's been, you know, really noticeable for me.
We do see, there are definitely times that we go in that we do see ruptures, you know, and that's a lot of times it's a silent rupture. We don't know, but that capsule keeps it contained. And that's the importance of making sure it's a surgeon that believes in the entire capsule coming out because we don't want that to spill in the patient's chest. But as far as like Dr. Pryor says, as far as saline, we think we're going to see this mold. It's a lot of times we don't see it. They look like the day they were put in and, you know, they're still so toxic with the silicone shell, but
The subjective data with the patient. So if you're a person who has breast cancer and you know you're facing breast removal, is this a facility that people should be looking at coming to for post-mastectomy rebuilding of their breasts because there's a healthy way to do it at your facility?
Yeah, I think yes and no. It's all very patient specific and really just depends on everybody's unique circumstances. So, and I'm not necessarily anti-breast implants completely, just to be clear. I think, you know, they may serve a role, especially everything's like risk benefit, right? So in a patient going through a cancer surgery, you know, maybe, you know, the benefit's a little bit more. So, you know, you just have to consider what the risks are. And so just like with everything, I think an appropriate informed consent, even in a breast cancer patient, you know, talking about the potential for breast implant illness, just like capsular contracture, just like breast implant rupture, you know, is something that's part of the discussion. One, so the patients can make an informed decision. And two, and I think more importantly, so that if any of these issues do come up down the road, they, you know, have symptoms, they feel like they might have breast implant illness, you know, the light bulb will go off in their head and they'll look to get treated, you know, as opposed to patients that we see very commonly that have been walking around with breast implants for years and for decades, and they've been to physicians and they've been to all kinds of, you know, diagnostic workups and, you know, nothing's really been clear for them and nobody's mentioned to them breast implant illness yet. So that when I see them for the first time, they're like, wow, I wish somebody would have told me that, you know, 20 years ago. So I think it is, I'm not saying that patients that are getting mastectomy or some kind of reconstructive breast surgery, you know, shouldn't be given the option of getting breast implants, because I think that's still a reasonable alternative. It just has to be done in the right way. And also breast reconstruction patients have the unique benefit of, you know, insurance companies that will cover different types of breast reconstruction. So there are more extensive options using their own tissue, you know, sometimes that can be used and covered by insurance to reconstruct a breast. So what we do here, because it's not done through insurance, you know, we could do a fat transfer, which is a much, you know, easier, technically less challenging outpatient type of procedure that can be done at the time of the explant. So that's kind of what we do at our outpatient facility. But obviously, if somebody does have a diagnosis of breast cancer and they are going through breast reconstruction, there could be additional options available to them that their insurance would actually cover.
I love it. Okay. So fat transfer, is that something that has what kind of recovery period afterwards? Is it easy recovery?
Yeah, the transfer itself is a very easy surgery and recovery. It's basically just like doing liposuction, but then instead of throwing the fat away, we use it to augment other areas. So, you know, the same process that we would do in liposuction is performed in this surgery, but then, you know, the fat's basically just distilled down to the fat cells and re-injected into the breast tissue. Also, you have to be an appropriate candidate for that surgery. You have to have, you know, the two most important variables are the donor site and the recipient site. So you have to have fat at the donor site where we're going to be harvesting the fat from. Some patients are very thin and they don't have an appropriate donor site. And you have to have somewhere at the recipient site that will support the fat graft once it's actually placed. It needs to go into tissue so that it can develop a blood supply and survive. So patients that are, you know, not going to have sufficient breast tissue, especially breast reconstruction patients, a lot of times because in the mastectomy, they're removing all of that breast tissue. So they may not be a candidate for a fat transfer procedure.
Okay. And can people get donor fat?
Unfortunately not. There is a product out there that's, you know, acellularized donor fat, and that potentially could be used, but it's very expensive. So it would be probably cost prohibitive to use it. It's called Renuva. It's used in different types of, you know, cosmetic surgical applications where patients are paying out of pocket for some kind of, you know, volume. So it's decellularized. Yeah. But generally speaking, it's not going to be a cost effective solution.
Okay. Well, we're coming to the end of our show. So Laura, what would you like to leave the audience with, and Dr. As well, if there's someone last thing to leave the people with for resource and help?
You know, I think the most important thing is, like Dr. Pryor had said, is informed consent, informed choice. Michelle, kind of like we had already talked about early on. That really is the most important thing. We will give you some links if there is anybody that would like to reach out to me. I'd be happy to. Actually, my direct line is 815-977-5781. We'll give them any links they need to even join our support group if they'd like. There is 2,200 beautiful, supportive women that have been through exactly what women are going through, and to make them realize they're not alone and they're not crazy.
Yeah, it's a big deal to not feel alone in a suffering. That is wonderful. How about you?
Yeah, I would just say to make sure that the patients, whether they're going to come see me or somebody else, have appropriate, you know, resources so that they can get the information they need about their condition, about potentially breast implant illness, and to find, you know, a surgeon that specializes in doing the explant surgery if that's what they decide to do. And fortunately, nowadays, I'm sure it's all over the internet. You know, you can Google around and get information. Laura's got a support group. There's a really popular support group called Healing Breast Implants by Nicole on Facebook. And so there's a lot of resources out there for patients now that are looking to get more information.
We're so thankful for what you're doing. Thank you for being a doctor who believes patients when they say they have symptoms, and being a solution as well. We appreciate you both.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
It's time and